Three, two, one. All right, rolling on another show. Back to back, four podcasts a day. I'm taking care of 4 weeks of action in one day. Man, it's almost like I'm a professional podcaster. What if this was like this every day and all I had to do in my life was record the sound of my own voice and make a living off of it? People would advertise on here and send me a check every month and I wouldn't have to drive my car anymore or cut any grass or do any other stuff that I don't really want to do but I have to do in order to pay the old gimmicks that come in the mail called bills. Man. So I stole that. Stole that line. Sorry. I like that line though. So back again, it's another episode of Tall Tales with Taylor Jones Podcast. I'm Taylor Jones. I am a drummer for the Vespers and other different people whenever they call me on the phone and say, hey, will you come do this gig on this time and this date or this session on this time and this date? And I say yes. So that's what I do. I do podcasting because, quite honestly, I needed to stay relevant when I'm not on the road or doing anything that other people can see. And I like podcasts a lot. I like interviews and I like being interviewed by a good interviewer. And I figured it would be a good thing if I could learn how to be a good interviewer. It might help me when I get interviewed. So that's kind of the whole how this whole thing started. And enough about me on that. It's all about my friends that come on the show and give me an hour of their time and tell all of us their story from whatever, you know, childhood or how they came to be doing whatever they're doing. Mostly musicians, mostly creative types. Had a couple of, you know, exceptions to that over the years on the podcast, but overall it's just supposed to be like, you know, two people talking. That's all it is. So if this is your first time listening to my show, I appreciate it. I'm excited for what this show is going to be. But first, I have to talk about my wife's new cat. My wife, Miss Kyla, who you've all heard before on here, whether or I locked her out of the house on accident and she needed the keys, or on the Israel retrospective episode, or any other fly-ins that she did on the show, she found a kitten on the side of the road when we were up there at her sister's house. Well, technically, her sister found it, actually, in Ohio, and this little baby kitten was about 5 weeks old. If you follow my Instagram, then you know you've seen the pictures of the little kitten, and she's orange, and only 20% of orange cats are female, come to find out. Who knew? So you learn something new every day around here about cats. But the funny part about that was we had just talked about not getting a cat the day before we found this cat because I didn't want another cat. We had a cat, and she ran off. I already went over that on the podcast a couple weeks ago. And didn't want to deal with another cat. I was content with just the two dogs. And somebody else offered us a kitten, and we said no. Well, then we find this kitten, and here we go again. I guess the Lord has it for us to have a cat. So she was eat up of fleas. She was had one of those little kitty sinus infections. She was sneezing. If you ever seen a five-week-old kitten sneeze? It's pretty cute, must admit. But we fixed all that with the help of the vet and some regular diet and living not outside and all that on her own. I don't know where the mama cat was or what happened, but she was looking pretty abandoned that day. And we just couldn't say no. So the kitten, though, she doesn't like me that much. She likes Kyla better. She'll tolerate me if I'm the only one around, but she literally will run right up to Kyla and lay down on her chest. And for me, she runs away. So I don't really get it. So me and cats, we're working on it. We're working it out. My new roommate here at the house, and the dogs are getting adjusted. They don't really care for anybody else taking the attention off of them. So that's what's going on here at the house. We're working in a new kitten into the family here. And, my wife told me we're not getting rid of it, so I got to go ahead and get used to it. So there you go. That's kind of what's going on here today. Miss Jordan Shellhart on the show today with me.
What's up?
Yes, welcome, welcome. So are you coming from the writer house today, or what are you doing today?
No, I didn't write today.
You didn't write today?
No, I had coffee for like 4.5 hours Dude, with someone.
I love that we can label that as a business expense too.
Right, I know.
Yeah.
Write it off.
Write it off. Write off half of it at least. Yes. So you write songs.
I write songs. I try to.
Okay, and
what's a typical work day for you like when you, we talked about this a little bit last night off the podcast, but what time does the music industry start?
Typically 11 o'clock. It's pushed back all the way to 11. So,
that's our get up time. Our be there time.
Our be there time is like 11:15. Really. It's in my calendar as 11, but you know, we have room to be flexible in the music business.
There's a lot of grace there with the tardiness.
There really is.
Thank goodness.
It's not good per se, because it trains you to be late for everything, and you can't be late for everything and be a human being. So
I feel like a few years ago, though, I could have swore the music industry started at 10.
It did. It gets pushed back by half an hour periodically. Okay. It used to be 9. I'm sure for a while it was 9:30. When you knew it, it was 10. And when I first started writing, it was 10:30. All my writes started at 10:30. And somehow now everything's at 11. So
weird. It's like the more coffee shops pop up, the later the later the writes start.
And the lazier we get.
So where do you write and all that stuff? Tell us how you came to be writing there and, you know, when all that started for you. Because you've been here for a long time writing songs for as young as you are.
Yeah, I've been writing for Seagale Music for almost 8 years.
Wow, I didn't know it was that long.
Yeah, it was the summer before my freshman year of high school that I signed at Seagale.
Dang.
And I used to go to school during the day and then start writing at 3 o'clock or whatever. And so it was really late back then. I guess the music business has gotten earlier for me, but
later for everybody else.
Yeah. Then I just been there ever since. Rhyming words and singing them.
Rhyming words and singing them. So we were making fun of Franklin last night, and then you told me that you were raised in Franklin. My bad.
That's all good. My bad. I went to a public school, if that redeems
all right, now I respect. Now anyway. I got some respect.
Yeah. And it was referred to as the ghetto school. I use air quotes because whatever that means.
What school is it?
Centennial.
Oh, yeah. I know about Centennial.
You know? What do you know about Centennial?
I know that when it... for you, it was... For Franklin, it's the ghetto school. For us, it was a prep school.
Right? I'm like, why is this called this?
No, I mean, we've seen some plays over there. Had some friends that went to school over there. And played ball and stuff over in there. And Callie and Phoebe, the girls in my group, used to live... Well, I guess their mom and dad still live like right around the corner from it. So, off of McEwen.
Yeah.
So, know it well.
Man, good times, kind of.
Are you originally from Franklin, or are you originally from somewhere else?
I was born in Wyoming.
Really?
Yep. Population five.
Population five.
Four, now that I left. And I moved to California when I was a baby, and I moved to Nashville when I was 10. So kind of bounced around for a second, but this is home. I grew up here.
How'd you end up? What was that, like a family decision to end up here?
Yeah, my mom came home one day, and she had pictures of houses in Nashville and said, "You want to move?" And me and my brother said, "Yeah."
Sure, let's go.
So then we did.
Awesome. So it's like a little bit different than the, neon dreams or whatever. Right. Let me go move to Nashville. You ended up here and then started writing songs,
no,
I guess.
We moved here for music.
Really?
I was just 10.
Okay.
So it sounds weird, but that was sort
was
of
it for you or for her?
For me. We were sort of going to leave California regardless, because it ain't cheap to live out there.
Definitely not.
But she was like, "Hey, you like to sing? We should go to Nashville."
And here we go.
And here we go. So it was 3 years later that I met the president of my publishing company that I write for still. So
is that Chris?
Crazy.
Okay. So he was boss even back then?
Yeah. Always been boss.
Yeah, man. Nice guy.
You know Chris?
Met him a couple of times. I wouldn't say I know him.
Love it.
But I just met... He came to Bible study a few times when we would have it there.
Oh, okay,
and
cool.
And so, I sat next to him on the couch for a few hours over the years, but that's about it.
He's a good dude.
Solid.
Family man, businessman.
About that business.
But in a cool way, not in a cutthroat way.
Yeah, he seems like one of the good ones, if that makes sense.
I'm super blessed to be there, for sure.
Well, that's what's up.
Been kind of sheltered from all the craziness of the business, just having him as my sort of patriarch of my career, I guess.
Does he watch over you pretty good?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, nothing crazies happen.
Good.
I've been sort of under the wing of Seagale, so.
I got you. I got you. So tell me about being a woman and a writer. Because, like, most writers I know are all men. Yeah. Is that true?
There's a lot.
Yeah.
There's not very many of us. Or there are more women, but it's more difficult to be paid attention to.
Okay, tell me about that. What's some of the difficulties that come with that?
You know, I don't really know the ins and outs of it. I know that, did you hear about some radio guy, I can't even remember who it was, recently said that women in country music are the tomatoes in the salad and the men are everything else. So that sort of seems to be the gist of it, is that we're typically treated like tomatoes. Just sort of a bonus and could take it or leave it. And there's days that I will be on Music Row writing or something, and I will run into probably 20, 25 people that day, and I will have been the only female that I would have seen. So, yeah, it's definitely a male-dominated business.
So, how does that, like, sort of work for you? How do you sort of, like, not let that bother you in any kind of way and just push through it and keep writing?
You know, I don't really know. I think it's sort of new to me in a way that I've been aware of it, because I was so young when I signed to my company. I was 14, and I was used to people not really paying attention to me or not taking me seriously, and I always attributed it to my age.
Okay.
So I didn't really have to think about feminist issues, because my head immediately went to another issue, which is just that I was a kid, so no wonder they don't take me seriously. So it was getting older and seeing that the tide doesn't necessarily change, and then hearing from other women that it's really common, and I realized that it was probably more than in part my gender.
See, and I sort of kind of, like, Bruno and me started real young playing in bands and stuff, and, like, I mean, he was like 13 years old, you know, 13, 14, 15, kind of like what you're saying, and we're trying to play in bars and stuff. And so we always sort of had that thing of like, are we even going to get in this place that we're supposed to play, know? And, that's a weird feeling when you get beyond it.
Yeah.
Cause it took me a while to realize that wasn't like a thing anymore. Mm. Like not having to worry about, you know, or cause there's pros and cons with it. Like when you're young and you do something, it's like, you're automatically, like, oh, there's like a cute factor.
Definitely.
There's like a,
so much grace is given to you.
And then one day you look around and you're 25 and it's like kind of, whoa, you're just like everybody else. Like, you're supposed to be good now. Right. Like, you're supposed to know what you're doing now. So
totally.
is it like that for you now that, I mean, you're 8 years, that makes you a vet. Like, either way you look at it, like, Music Row veteran.
Isn't that funny?
Yes.
Yeah, I definitely feel like I've learned so much. I feel like I went to school for the music business, really, since I was a freshman in high school. It's just been my life, has been training, kind of. So it's been amazing. I think songwriting in particular is something that, yes, you probably are born with a gifting or sort of a tendency to be good at that sort of thing. But I fully 100% believe that nurturing that is equally as important as any kind of talent. So from the time I was 14, I was in rooms with professional songwriters that have, you know, like, my average co-write is probably 30 to 45 year old dudes since I was 14. And just learning, like, sitting in the room with them and hearing the lines they come up with and hearing the way that they can manipulate rhymes or whatever it is, or the, you know, where people go melodically, it just rubs off on you. So eventually, not to mention Chris Dubois, speaking of him, my publisher, from 14 years old, I would play him songs and he would tell me what didn't make sense about them and say, like, I don't get this line. What do you mean here? You have to make this more clear or whatever. So it really is like school, and it's benefited me vastly, I would say.
I mean, I don't know how it couldn't. I mean, if these are the best songwriters in the country,
right,
a lot of them,
definitely,
then you're like, how can you not, you know, have some of that bounce off onto you and go, right, oh, that's how you do that.
Right. And you also, they say you have to learn the rules in order to break them. So I've spent 8 years learning the rules, and I just now am feeling like I'm in a place with my writing where I'm learning what it is that I can bring to the table that's different and unique, and what rules I can break in an intentional kind of way. And that took me 8 years, and I'm 22 right now. So I'm young, but it still took a while.
Well, I mean, I think like you saying with it being like a college experience, you know, part of college is just getting the opportunity to grow up.
Right.
You know, and just like, okay, yeah, we're in school. It's a safe, but it's like supposed to be like a safe place to grow up, you know, and it sounds like you almost kind of have like a, what do you call that when, like an apprenticeship, like you've got an apprentice with some of the best in the world.
Right.
And now you're an 8 year experienced, you know, writer. Mm-hmm. That's, I mean, you just can't, nobody can take care of, a lot of us by the time we're your age, like we're just starting to write. Like, does that make sense?
Right, right.
Like, I don't think that I even touched songwriting until I was at least 22 or 23.
Yeah.
Because
it
was just so
stories.
Intimidating, you know?
Intimidating, yeah.
Yeah, like, I thought it, I still think it is. It's still
for what reason?
Because I don't, I'm not confident in my ability to explain things in a song.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm very confident in my ability to, like, talk it out, to make a point, shall we say.
Right.
But, when you start mixing in the melodies and the limited amount of space that you have and the,
that's why I'm infinitely jealous of rappers.
Cause they have all this space.
So much space.
Okay.
Yeah. So melodies do limit you in a way, but it's an art form in itself.
It is. And that's the thing. I don't feel artistic in that way.
Okay.
I don't feel like a person, like a gifted type songwriter. I'm the guy that has to like rise above his own like insecurities about it and just go through. You know,
yeah.
I don't feel like I bring a lot to the table, in other words.
Huh.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? How much time have you spent doing it?
Not a lot.
See?
That's right.
That's what I'm saying. It's experience.
Exactly right.
The last 8 years have been me learning how to write songs.
Yeah. And honestly, like, I mean, there's no better feeling than having written a song.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no, like, worse feeling than trying to write one to me. Like, that's how I look at it.
I feel that.
Like,
get that.
Trying to write one is like freaking pulling teeth with a rusty pair of pliers. But, like, when you do get one written, and it's like it's good, or people like it or whatever, then
yeah,
I don't know, you're just
experience.
Like, wow, I was a part of that. Like, I don't feel like I was
creating something is like that. It's amazing because it's a reflection of what God did with us, and when we get to participate in that, it really is mind-blowing.
Yeah.
But you know, our friend Adam McCants at Bible study recently, he said that he found out that the word passion is derived from the Latin word passeo, which means to suffer for.
Right.
Yeah. And that kind of redefined the way that I think about passion, or being passionate about something. Am I willing to suffer for it? So songwriting is no different than any other passion. It's hard. It's hard to write a song, like you're saying. Sometimes it does feel like pulling teeth with whatever you just said, rusty plier or something, your Southern sayings. But are you willing to suffer for it, you know?
That's exactly. And Adam was... He blew my mind with that too.
Yeah.
Like that little statement. And it's true. I mean, we kind of overuse the word passion without knowing what it means.
Yeah.
You know, in this city, it's like, oh, I'm passionate about this or that.
Passionate about food or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, you can be passionate about those things, I guess, but
there are people that have suffered for food. Like, I get that.
Yeah. If you're passionate about coffee, you're probably going to move to Peru and start,
start crunching those coffee beans
right
there on the ground. But I don't know. I mean, I love it, but our situation was different. You know, we weren't writing songs that other people had to like and accept and cut. We were just...
For fun.
We were making songs that, as long as we all four dug it, then we're rolling with it. And it really didn't matter who wrote it, kind of thing. That was my experience. So, but the idea of like, hey, show up at this time, at this hour, and we're going to like try to, you know... crack a few eggs and make an omelet here.
Man,
and
I don't even
song.
Like it. I don't like doing that, to be honest.
Yeah.
I've sort of taken the, I've began to walk away from co-writing for that reason, because it just feels like, to me, it just gets to where it feels like a job sometimes, you know? And it's like, why am I inspired to write right now? Well, I'm not. I'm just doing it because this person was put on my calendar for me to be inspired with. And there's definitely, again, like, I spent 8 years doing that. It trains you. It's a muscle, and you work it, and that's invaluable. But sometimes I just get to a place where I'm like, I just want to write a song because I love writing songs and because I have something to say and I have a feeling that I want to convey. And I think those are the thing, those are the first things that get sacrificed when you begin the 11 to 4 everyday co-write thing.
So are you writing more by yourself now?
Yeah.
So do you do that at home or where do you go to do that?
I can do that anywhere. That's the beauty of it. Mm-hmm. I wrote a song in the car the other day driving because I felt like it. So it's just, I've written songs putting on makeup. I've written songs in the shower. I've written songs when I've sat down with an instrument and tried to as well. But I don't know. It's become more important to me to actually care about what I'm saying than it has ever been.
Who's some of your favorite writers?
Man, good question. Shoot. I think the people that really helped kind of raise my bar lyrically in particular were originally like Lori McKenna and Jason Isbell and sort of that style of writing, just so narrative and imagey and cool. And then recently, Kendrick Lamar has completely shattered what I thought about music. He's like elevated my bar to unreachable heights at this point, just seeing the way he crafts a lyric, second of all the way he crafts an entire album, every single thing down to the detail on the album cover is intentional and put there for a reason. So that kind of stuff, just really cool on purpose writing.
I got you. So Lori McKenna, I was wondering if you were going to mention her because, like,
yeah,
even as outside of like that world that I am, like, I've sort of lately been made aware of who she is,
she's
like,
great.
For the first time.
Yeah.
And she is great.
Yeah.
And she's one of the women.
Yeah, she is.
One of the few that I could name, I guess.
Yeah, there's some amazing women in Nashville that are writing amazing songs. She's definitely one of them. Hillary Lindsay, Natalie Himby, you know, Stephanie Lambring, like people that you don't even know necessarily. There really are amazing women writing songs. There's only a few that get a seat at the table, and Lori, thankfully, is one of them. She probably, I don't know how hard she had to fight for that seat, but regardless, I know she's deserving of it because her songs are amazing.
Yeah, I never have understood, I kind of hate male-dominated stuff because if the world is your audience, right,
mm-hmm.
or your customer base or what have you, then, like, 50% of that is female.
Yeah.
And most men don't have a clue what the way that a lady would look at something or the mm-hmm. way that they would value it or, you know, we can't figure y'all out. That's just a shoot. So why are we trying? Like, I don't get the whole, you know, well, songwriting is male dominated and it's, well, it doesn't need to be because half of your audience is female.
Well, here's the thing though. 90-something% of the artists on country radio are males. So it's not like male writers are suddenly trying to write female songs all the time. It's that there's nowhere to put female songs because there are no female artists
to give them to.
So it's appropriate that men are writing all of the songs because men are singing all of the songs. It's just unfortunate. And I think that speaks to a lot of deep-seated issues just in terms of women-to-women relations even. Like, why is it that women buy more male records than female records? Why is it that women are quick to write off a female artist or kind of it brings it like almost visceral reactions from other women, whatever that is. I don't know. It's complicated.
So do you tend to lean one way or the other? Do you prefer a male singer or artist to a female or the opposite way? Or
man, I like to think that I prefer good music. Emmylou Harris is one of my favorites of all time. Sheryl Crow is one of my favorites of all time. And then, you know, there's plenty of men that offset that. I love music. And I think what I've learned is that I love honest music that's true to the person speaking it, you know.
I got you. So the unspoken sort of realness of it that everybody
yeah.
either knows or doesn't.
Right.
Either is or isn't.
And that's what you see, I think, in pop music right now, is just this transparency, whether when I listen to John Bellion's new record, or like Lucas Graham even, or just these guys that are blowing up Spotify. Lucas's whole record, I mean, he talks about his dad dying like every other song. And I don't know why that's considered commercial or why it's having a commercial effect, other than the fact that people like authenticity, whether they know it or not. So I think that when that begins to be missing from the equation, it's really unfortunate.
Yeah, we definitely, I definitely agree. Yeah.
Chance the Rapper's record, like his new record, when you listen to that, it's like, there's no way I can listen to that album and walk away thinking anything other than he just wrote songs about his life and I just listened to it and I know him better now.
So you seem to like, I wouldn't expect you to have all this hip hop in your arsenal there. So what got you into that style of music?
I briefly hung out with / kind of dated a guy who was a spoken word poet and rapper, and he introduced me to this rapper named Decca, who's this indie guy from New York City. One of his songs, I just was listening to it and I was blown away by the lyricism and just the rhymes. I thought were so interesting, something I would never think to put in my own music. And from there, I started listening to some spoken word poetry, and I think really I first became acquainted with spoken word, which led to me, I think Kendrick was the first record that I really grasped onto. So I'm new to the hip hop table. I'm not an expert at all. I just love it. And I think the interesting thing about hip hop, whether it's Kendrick Lamar or J. Cole or Chance, there's little like groups that are popping up right now that are talking about really important things that I would boldly say no other genre is brave enough to tackle.
Okay.
And so that's what I really love about hip hop right now, is just, man, fearlessness. And I think the fearlessness stems from seeing something that's so important, and trying to give voice to the voiceless in that way. So that's what I respect a lot.
Man, that's a great point. Like, I didn't think about that, but now that you highlight it, it's so true. Like, they'll say it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? These artists, they're not afraid of whatever repercussions of what they say. They're going to say it.
Right. And the amazing thing is that they're becoming superstars, saying things and doing things that the industry would look at and say, that's never going to work. You can't do that. And they're doing it and they're proving it wrong. So I think we would be probably wise to take note in other genres.
I mean, I think so too. It's the shallowness in music is not going to make for great music. You know, we were just talking about in the last, my previous interview about What's Going On by Marvin Gaye. And you go, okay, that song was about race problems in the 60s. Well, guess what? It fits right now too.
Right?
Because it was just, it was a commentary of what he was looking at out the window.
Right.
You know, what he's experiencing on a daily basis. And
mm-hmm.
that's the part that's like, when you're getting to do music in any form or fashion, like, you're getting to be a part of some magical stuff.
Absolutely.
Because there's just something about it that affects your soul, even though you're alive now. Like, mm-hmm. you feel it on a different level, like a great song, whatever that is to you, like it makes you feel different than, like, I compare it to, like, I love to play sports,
mm-hmm.
and like there's very few things on earth to me that feels better than throwing a touchdown pass. Like, that's a cool experience that lasts that long.
Wow. Yeah.
Whereas a song, you can experience it over and over again, and depending on where you are in life, you know, you can revisit a song that really made a impact on you when you were, you know, 5-6 years ago. And now it may have a whole different commentary altogether.
Wow. Yeah.
So,
man, absolutely.
I don't know what it is about, like, this crazy game that called music that we just, that we just can't get enough of it, you know? Yeah. And it is a magical transaction. Like, things, lives change because of lyrics that are sung or spoken or whatever.
Which is why I think it also carries some responsibility when you're the 100%. One being you know, the vessel through which lyrics flow, because you're right. And, you know, C.S. Lewis talks about how everything that's good is equally, can be equally and opposite bad. So he's saying a cockroach in its essence can't really be good or bad. A dog can be good and a dog can be bad. A human can be really good or really bad, or great or evil, or whatever you want to, however you want to say it. And he said that's why the devil was an archangel, because the better you are, the more capacity for evil you have. And I feel that way about music. I feel like music can change people's lives in such profound ways and be so impactful. And that carries with it necessary responsibility, because it can be damaging as well.
So tell me about your relationship with C.S. Lewis.
Oh, man. C.S. Lewis is my boy. I love him. Essentially, he laid out the Christian faith in a way that was so compelling and enticing to me, because I thought it was absurd. And C.S. Lewis's books, particularly Mere Christianity, showed me that Christian faith is reasonable and logical, and that you don't have to set aside reason and logic in order to have faith. They actually go together.
So how much does reading sort of play into your writing? Like, do you read a lot, or do you read a little bit, or like, what's your reading life like?
I do. I read a lot. And it has totally shaped my writing. Interestingly enough, I get sort of in, I'm pretty like tunnel vision about certain things. So I'll go through phases, and my songs always reflect the phase that I'm in the moment, which is really cool, and makes me more strategic about what phase I want to enter into, because it has the repercussions of here's suddenly your catalog has taken a dramatic turn. So C.S. Lewis has really influenced my writing, definitely.
So what phase are you in right now?
Man, I'm kind of in this like awakening to social justice issues that my head's been kind of in the sand for a lot of years. And I've been really deeply touched and deeply affected by the voiceless in our country and in our world, really. I mean, the news right now is insane. It's absolutely crazy. We're in a period of upheaval. And I think I saw Will Smith talking yesterday in an interview, and he said that it was simple, but the way that he said it was really impactful to me. He just said, it's always darkest before the dawn. And he's like, of course, right now things are crazy, but this is the time where we should have the most hope, knowing that it has to be brought into light. It has to be talked about. It has to be worked through in order for anything to ever get better.
Yeah. We talked a lot about that last night, all of us. Yeah. And it's like, man, when it's the cool thing to do to freaking, you know, love one another, regardless, mm-hmm. like that's going to be a good time.
Right.
You know, like right now it's still kind of acceptable to do and say racist things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when hopefully with enough enlightenment and education, and it can start with like somebody like Kendrick Lamar,
right.
somebody like LeBron
it did
James.
For me.
Absolutely. Like, you know, I had posted a tweet a few days before the ESPYs, just like basically just saying, man, I beg these guys that have some power, some influence, mm-hmm. like not your politicians, but your, you know, your LeBron Jameses, your mm-hmm. Tom Brady's, your these guys,
right?
Like to stand up and freaking please say something about this,
mm-hmm.
you know, and not just the African American athletes,
no.
because we know they want it,
mm-hmm.
but like, where's Eminem? Like, where are these people at? Like all like, and yeah, mm-hmm. I'm calling you out for sure. Like you should, like it is your responsibility on mm-hmm. some level to take a stand for that. And it was so good to see, you know, LeBron and Carmelo and Chris Paul and Dwayne Wade or whoever it was, that all those guys just stood up there and just told it like it was at the top of the show, where like millions of white people are going to be watching, mm-hmm. as well as mm-hmm. all kinds of people. But, you know,
yeah.
Is it okay to, you know, say that we have a problem now?
I know.
Like, we're trying to fix it, but first we have to say that there is one.
Exactly. I think that's what it is. I think the reason why there's such a struggle right now is like boils down to the root of obviously the fall and sin, but specifically a lack of humility. I think that's like the thing that I'm seeing a lot. And I think humility just comes from knowing Christ. So again, we just go back to that issue. Obviously, like we were talking about last night, conversion isn't enough. Social justice is necessary. Meeting people's physical needs is necessary. And so it's an interesting balance. But I would say that approaching those topics with humility is rare and should be a mark of the church. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, it's on us. You know, it's, somebody said, I don't remember who it was, but it's like, what would be nice right now is if we could point to the church as a reference mm-hmm. for racial harmony, but we
right.
can't.
Right.
Because there's not a single day of the week is more separated than Sunday.
Yep.
And that's an embarrassment.
11 o'clock on Sunday, most segregated hour of the week.
Yeah, it's crazy, but it can get better. And there are churches that are trying. Right. And there are churches that are the opposite of that. And that's what's good is like, you know, because maybe 40 years ago that wasn't happening at all. But now it's happening more. So hopefully 40 years from now, it'll be the majority. And that's what we got to work for, you know. I know we got off a tangent on here, but like this is what this is for. This is what we'd be talking about,
right?
The two of us. So like, this, you're getting the real deal if you're listening to this. If you've made it this far, if you stuck with us,
humility.
That's you know, I don't know, musicians and artists and writers. It's the big question is like, what do I say? What do I write about today?
Right.
And I think that's a tough question sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, what is on your heart? And sometimes there's nothing. And on those days, typically I just won't write. And that's not good advice. Because if you're, again, paseo to suffer for, like push through it and come up with something. But man, sometimes I just think we have messages that are meant to be delivered through us. James Taylor one time said that songwriting, he said, it's not, I don't ever think of it as I just made up this song. He said, it feels like I was just the first person to hear it. And I feel that.
I love that.
Yeah.
So do you subscribe to the some writers that say you just got to write every day? Is that something that you think there's a lot of legitimacy to? Or
I do. I really do. I don't do that.
Right.
But when I am doing that and making it really intentional, I see a difference for sure. Like going on vacation is the worst thing a songwriter can do.
Really?
I totally believe it, because it's a muscle and it gets sleepy and then it takes you a week to wake it up again.
Okay, so whereas if you're writing every day, it's like different sort of rhymes or different words just kind of just comes to the mind easier, or like what's that like?
Yeah, I think, you know, people talk about getting burned out.
Okay.
I think getting burned out from, in my experience, comes from just either co-writing too much or having bad co-writes too much. Burnout comes from not performing to a high, to the capacity that you know you're capable of. I think that's where my burnout comes from, is like, man, I hate what I'm doing. Now I'm burned out. But it's not from the amount that I'm writing that's burning me out. It's the quality that I'm writing that's burning me out.
I got you. That's real. Dang. I know. Cause it's hard to get burnt out when every gig's awesome.
I know.
You know, like the gigs that burn us out are when you have a string of crappy ones.
Exactly.
And you make no money.
Exactly. Like that,
I don't know. It's coming from the touring aspect of it, at least.
Similar, I'm sure.
Yeah. You're just like, when they're all great, you're like, yeah, you know, we can do this awesome. Forever. You
totally.
Know?
But it's like with anything. You know, but you got to push through it. I'm sure, like, in your marriage, there's times when you feel burned out being married, but that don't mean you get a divorce.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's the ultimate example of patience and grace, and, like, you know, pushing through it sometimes means just, like, regimented prayer time.
Yeah.
You know, like, that, honestly, that's when we go to shit is when we don't do that.
Right.
You know what I mean? I know for us, at least, and... You know, we need to do better. We need, you know, but it's hard because you feel like I'm just a piece of junk. You know, I'm like, I'm not worthy of leading you in prayer. Mm. That's how it feels sometimes.
Dang.
Because I'm so, she knows more than anybody. You know, you just where your failures are and stuff, where your selfishness is.
Yeah.
So.
Dude, is that similar? Because sometimes I feel that way even just talking to God. I'm like, oh, I'm not worthy to talk to you. And obviously, he explicitly speaks against that throughout Scripture and says to talk to him. But I imagine that it's a similar feeling when you just said, I'm not worthy of leading you in prayer. I bet that just compounds the issue.
Well, and it's like, I've never had the issue, like, as bad as I've been, like, I've always felt like the line was pretty open between me and God. But, like, So I haven't ever had an insecurity on that level, but I definitely have it when it comes to involving her and and the leading part. Like, I definitely feel like a piece of crap leader, so much so that I'm like, well, maybe we can pray together after I've, you know, sort of prayed for myself for a while enough to maybe get 1 or 2 days in a row where I'm not a total idiot. You know what I mean? And then when I'm on a roll, then maybe we can kind of take it from there. But
interesting.
It's going back to pushing through it. It's like last night, you know, we had a kind of a corporate prayer right there after there. And it was like, you know, I'm not necessarily comfortable making those situations happen, but
I loved that you did.
But
you said, let's pray about this, y'all.
You do need to push through it, because I think especially after a big epic conversation like that, it's really all just reduced to gossip if you don't take action, if you don't pray, physically pray together.
Interesting. Gossiping about social issues.
Yes.
I hadn't thought about it like that.
If you don't, somebody told me that, or where, I don't remember where I read it, but basically if you talk about it as Christians and then you don't pray for it, you know, then you are just basically just gossiping about what's going on. And so that being the case, that was where the conviction factor comes in. So when there's conviction, like, it's a lot easier to push through it because I'm like, dude, that's your responsibility. But when it's something as so free and loose as like a marriage is, where it's like, you know, you can kind of decide which way you want to go or whatever. I don't necessarily feel the right convictions a lot of times. So still figuring out. That's the weakest part of our marriage for me as a leader, is like not feeling too self-conscious to pray right. You know what I mean?
Wow.
I don't know. It's just tough. But you got to, like I said, you got to push through it. And like last night, because nobody's going to go home and remember every single thing.
So when you involve
everybody, every single person has a different set of convictions. So that's five of us there. That's five times the power in my estimation.
Yeah.
You know, because we all have like one area that jumps off the page.
Yeah.
But odds are it's five different areas. So
five different prayers.
Exactly. And one, and by scripture definitely says, you know, where two or more are gathered, you know, then there I'll be. And it's like, not that he's not there when it's just one, but he's saying like, pray together, people. Like, it only takes, you know, a group. It only takes two to have a group.
You know, it only takes two
to have a Bible study too.
Yeah.
You know, like, I think sometimes we can get in our heads that, well, if four or five people don't come, we'll probably just chill. You know, it's like, well, no.
Interesting.
You know,
it's you and your wife.
Yeah. And we definitely fall into that, you know, and it just comes with maturity. We got long ways to go and figuring it out, but it's definitely on my mind.
Wisdom.
Oh,
I'm packing that away.
Yeah. Put that in your, in your pocket and deal with it. So,
I don't think that's a phrase, but
maybe
like
I'll
it.
Need to deal with it. But yeah, so that's what, you know, again, people, we're on a tangent, but this is what we talk about.
This is
so
conversation.
This is the realest thing. We forgot that we had the thing rolling.
I forgot that I had a microphone.
Yeah, we forgot that the thing is rolling.
Just talking.
But that's what this podcast is. It's just the real conversations that happen. And so many times I've wished that different people could fly on the wall, different conversations amongst artists, especially like people that are fans of certain people, you know, that I've gotten an interview. I'm like,
yeah,
because I know how the transaction goes when somebody's a fan.
Yeah.
It's like, and I don't mean that to be like a fan in a negative sense. I just know, like, when I'm a fan of something, I kind of sort of see this person as like, you know, somebody I'd like to be like or whatever, aside from liking what they produce as a musician. It's like, well, we want to highlight some of the real like human being factors of the people that I know have fans.
That's cool.
You know, and so, because ultimately we all just come down to being brothers and sisters. And like, some people have a job where, you know, they have fans, you know, it doesn't change the fact that, you know, you need to know their junk too.
Yeah, man.
You know, it'll help you relate to them more, honestly, because junk is way more relatable than, special talent or perfection.
Well, shoot, what kind of junk you want to know? I haven't disclosed anything.
Oh, I don't know. What's, let's see. What? All right, I'll dig one up here for you. What?
All right.
So you're 22 years old. You're sitting in a seat that people move to town every single day.
Yeah.
To want to be in the position that you're in. Like, you get paid to write songs. Like, here, that's a shoot. So, how have you dealt with sort of taking it for granted, or the, what's a word me and Danny were using the whole time? I done forgot.
Means what?
The where you expect things to just kind of happen for you. What's that word called?
Oh,
we talk about it all the time.
Yeah, of course, now that you say it.
What
the entitlement?
Heck is entitlement? How do you deal with the entitlement factor of being like, I've been here for a while. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, when am I going to be like respected as one of the greats? You know,
that's
like
funny.
Those type of things.
Yeah. Man, I think that's a good question. I haven't thought that through all the way. It's definitely something I think about. Which I don't like love admitting, but sometimes I'm like, man, this is taking a while, you know, but how do I deal with it is the question. Really the only logical way to deal with it is trusting that your life is on a trajectory that was penned long before you entered the world, and knowing that the story that's being written for you is better than you could have ever written it yourself. So that's how I deal with it. I will say, that I do struggle with those thoughts occasionally, just, but you know what? The other thing is I couldn't sing for like a year and a half. That's a fun part of my story.
I was going to ask you about that. So tell it how you want to tell it.
Well, yeah, I just, I had a record deal and publishing deal or whatever, was kind of touring and doing some cool stuff, and, I lost my voice, didn't get it back for a long time, and I was told that I had a condition called spasmodic dysphonia, which is incurable and neurological/psychological/ no one really knows anything about it. And so I was sort of under this impression that I was probably never going to be able to sing again. So losing my voice has really changed the way I looked at everything. First of all, foundation, I wasn't a Christian before that happened. And then I lost my voice. And God, through that, showed me that I didn't need my voice in order to survive or in order to be, to matter as a person. And it was when I learned that I didn't need it, that I got it back. And so that's completely changed the way my whole outlook on the music business anyway, is just knowing like, hey, I almost couldn't do this ever again. And, by the grace of God, I'm still singing and writing songs. And so I just feel blessed to be able to do it at this point. I think I probably struggled with your question, entitlement, more before losing my voice. And now I just realize that it's not in my control at all, and that it's just a huge blessing to be able to do it.
Amen to that. That is the truth. Sometimes we gotta... somebody said... it takes brokenness before we can find righteousness.
Amen.
You know, like, we got to hit the bottom and have stuff taken away sometimes to even appreciate it.
Right.
And thankfully, you know, there are times where you get it back, you know, and like, not all the time when something gets taken away, is it gone forever?
Yeah. And that's, I'm a testament to that for sure. Although, I'm thankful to have learned that my whole life wasn't hinging upon getting it back.
So were you able to talk at that time?
Not all the time. I couldn't speak loudly, certainly. And I sort of had to resort to this, like, talking in falsetto all the time thing, because I couldn't speak regularly. Yeah, it was bizarre. I was in high school still, so occasionally a teacher would call on me in class, and I would just look at them like deer in the headlights, please don't do this to me. There were times when I would be we had a Chick-fil-A across the street from good old Centennial High, and rolling through the driveway, I would go to... or the drive-through, I would go to order and realize I couldn't. And so it was like little things like that that just sort of wrecked you on a weekly basis.
How long did that last?
About a year and a half.
Jeez.
Yeah. So that was a crazy time.
Year and a half of dealing with, maybe I'll be able to talk, maybe I won't.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Especially just knowing how important my voice has been and is to me. Both physically and metaphorically, being heard and feeling like it's important to be able to say things that matter to me, and having that taken away in a really literal sense was super challenging.
I can't imagine, man. Like, I've never really lost anything like that. You know like what I mean? Voice. No. Well, if I lost my voice, that'd be no big loss to a lot of people. My singing voice. But, you know, like, even if you, like, break your leg or something, you can't run for a while. And you're like, oh, my gosh, I wish I could run. Like, yeah, that yeah. kind of thing. My right. sister went through that. Katie's went through that.
Yeah.
You know, and still dealing with it. It's, like, almost 10 years ago.
Mm.
You know, it's like, dang, man. I really need to check my attitude. You know, yeah. get to hit drums. I get to run around, throw footballs. Get to do whatever I want to do, basically.
Right.
You know, so what? You don't have certain things that maybe you're still striving after, but Lord, it's good to have something to strive after. You know, you got to have some kind of motivation.
Totally.
You know, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Like, if you want a nice truck one of these days, go work. Make right. it be your motivation to why you want to, you know, show up to work every day. You know, that'd be cool.
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously that's quick to cross a line, and there needs to be perspective along with your motivation, if that is your motivation. But my pastor says that it's not bad to have things, but it is bad for things to have you.
Absolutely. Oh, my gosh. My dad used to say that about his about the restaurant. He's like, I don't own it. It owns me. You know, I was talking about his time. Like, it just wow. takes so much of your time.
Yeah.
That's like, I think it owns me. I don't think I own it.
Man.
You know?
It's intense.
Yeah, but now he's, you know, work. He's less, he's less and less. You know what I mean? Like, he's right. got it. He's got more help now than he ever had. You know, he's got more freedom because of that than he ever had. Now, it, like, he owns it. You know, when I was a kid and it was just all him.
Yeah.
It was rough. So I always kept that in mind of not letting anything own me because, you know.
It's a dark place, man. Music owned me for. Until I lost it. I remember it's funny, I did an interview when I was 15 and I had a record deal, and in the interview I said music is the light at the end of every tunnel. It's always there. That was my quote. And then it wasn't there anymore, and I had to realize that music is a fickle light and it's quick to burn out. Everything except for God is a fickle light.
Boom. There, just say it, why don't you?
Shoot.
Just say it. Woo! Snap, snap. No, that's true, man. Like you said, it's good to have goals, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
You know, nice things, there's nothing wrong with that either.
Mm-mm. But it's not the ultimate thing.
Yeah, but you know, like, hey, if that motivation gets off like that, and all of a sudden music is God, it'll let you down, folks.
It will.
Everything short of Christ will let you down, though, you know.
Yeah.
Doing this, having the stages and the people and the hits or whatever, it's like,
right.
yeah, it's cool. It's right. not cool for long.
There's very few people that actually achieve the thing that they think is going to fulfill them. And everybody who actually does says, wow, that's not what I expected. So I don't know why we can't take people's word for it, but we have trouble with that.
Dude, we heard Jim Carrey. Was that somebody said? He was like,
yeah. What did he say?
He said, I wish everybody could become rich and famous. Like, no, there's nothing to it.
Yep. That's not the answer.
Yeah. It's like, woo.
I believe that.
That's a lot. Yeah. That's a lot to chew on right there.
Mm-hmm. We're just trucking along, trying to get stuff done, but we have contentment at our fingertips.
Yeah. But, you know, it's a fun journey nonetheless. We're working through it. It's more fun with community, though.
Happy to be here.
And, I'm thankful for our little community that we all have down here on Wednesday nights.
Me too, man.
That's kind of our deal. We have this Bible study on Wednesday nights, and it's mostly people that are in and around the music industry in one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have to be, though. Not a requirement, folks.
Y'all are invited.
Yes. It's not a requirement, but challenging perspectives, which I like. Like, I appreciate, you know, people like you and Brian who, like, really are not afraid to shake the snow globe up and be like, yo, here, check this out. Like, not just going to tell you what you want to hear kind of thing.
Well, I've never gotten anywhere by people just telling me what I wanted to hear. So I figure I shouldn't do everybody else the disservice of trying it.
Mm-mm. Well, what's next for you?
Still writing songs, I think, is next for me. I would love to make a record. So I've been toying with the idea of that. And like I said, I feel like I've hit this moment where my songs feel unique to me. They feel like something that the artist Jordan Shellhart would say and that no one else is probably going to say. So that feels like an opening, that feels like something that I should at least try.
How would that work for you, being you have a publishing deal and stuff? Would you have to go about it like an indie artist would, or would you have some kind of backing? Like, how would that even work?
Yeah, it's sort of a mystery at this point. I've done the major record deal thing, and it was cool. I mean, I don't know. I guess I'm not opposed to anything, but I think right now I just want to have, this sounds so trite, but I just want to have fun making music. So whatever that looks like, I don't know. I just want to put my voice on my words and have it somewhere, whether it's like SoundCloud for free for like my grandma or or more than that.
That's real. I love that line. That's what it is anyway. A lot of it, we're going to have to give away records anyway. Yeah. You know?
The DOJ is like,
yeah, bruh.
Y'all writing for free now.
Yeah, bruh. It's like trying to sell hamburgers in a place where hamburgers are free. That's what freaking record sales are like now.
It is. It's so real.
Hey, got to come up with a different hustle. Have some good t-shirts.
Yeah, that's it. Tour. Yeah. Get on the road. But not everybody has that luxury.
Mm-mm. Shoot, luxury. Yeah, road is work.
You what?
The road is work.
Yeah. The money is nice.
Yeah, it's nice when it's the road's like anything. It's when it's good, it's real good.
Yeah.
When it's bad, it's real bad. You know what I mean? Like, it's one thing to have a bad day at home. At least you can go home to your own bed. A bad day on the road, you're like going home to somebody else's bed.
No, not cool.
Some hotel or some Airbnb now or whatever.
This is the glamorous life of a musician.
Yeah, when you're like, I really hope I get to shower this week. You have to start having those conversations with yourself.
That's amazing. Paseo.
Yep.
What you willing to suffer for?
Mm-hmm. That's what's been so fun with working with, because I've been on the road with Callie and Phoebe and my brother. It's like,
yeah,
you know, to work with them, and they done all this crazy stuff that we did, you know, and they were young ladies, and they never whined a bit. They put up with every bit of it, you know, and like toughed it all out and never complained a lick. If anybody complained, it was me, you know, it was me or Bruno, but they just never, it was always impressive, you know, but like you said, when you like doing it, you don't mind,
right?
You know, you'll put up with all that long drives and little sleep or whatever, you know, you just do it.
It's payoffs.
Yeah, it's fun.
Got to make sacrifices.
Well, can you believe we got an hour already?
Dang. Twas a pleasure.
See,
good,
it ain't hard, is it?
No, I'm good at talking.
Yeah, the podcast game. Got your voice back.
Yeah, man.
There it is.
There we go. I don't know if I'm interesting to hear talk, but I know that I enjoy doing it, so.
Well, good. Well, that's what's a pod. Anybody can have a podcast, folks. Even me. So I hope you enjoyed this episode. Miss Jordan, I'm sure she's going to write some song that you're going to love if she hasn't already. So be on the lookout. Mm-hmm. Look in the liner notes.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, the liner note queen. That's going to be her one of these days. All right. We've had a good time. We're going to sign off for today. Hope to see y'all next week. Subscribe. Send me a review on iTunes, 5 stars, something along those lines. Make me look more legit than I actually am. I'd appreciate it. That's one way you can get back to the old podcast if you had a good hour of whatever drive time killed with us here today. We appreciate you listening. I'm Taylor Jones. I'm Mr. Jordan Shellhart. We'll see you later.
Bye.